Here on The Naked Scientist, we cover new developments all the time, from robotics to pharmaceuticals. But this week, we're exploring a whole new field of research, one you've probably never heard of before. It's called xenobiology, that's spelt with an X, and it might just change the world. But what the heck is it? Luckily for me, the world experts in this field gathered together for a meeting at University College London, alongside experts in risk, philosophy, and business. Their aim? To discuss where this new technology could lead and work out what the risks might be. And my aim was to find out just what it was and what it might mean for all of us. The story of xenobiology starts in the 70s and 80s with the emergence of a technology we all know very well today, and that's genetic modification.
So a genetically modified organism is perhaps one that contains DNA that didn't belong in the organism to begin with. It might have been taken from something else, or perhaps a set of genes from different organisms have been put together to create a pathway to manufacture a specific product.
Dr. Brenda Parker is a lecturer in the Department of Biochemical Engineering at University College London.
So, for example, there's a lovely paper about making bioplastics in microalgae. So they took the genes from another organism that happens to make this bioplastic, and they inserted that into the microalgae, so it began to make the bioplastic inside the cells. So that would be an example of a genetically modified organism.
DNA is the code inside all living things. It's like an instruction manual that makes you you and me me. And because it's written in this universal biological language, if I take an instruction from one thing and put it inside another, you can sometimes, if you've done it right, give one organism a trait from another. And when it comes to applications, the sky is the limit. From the frivolous, you can give a cat genes from a jellyfish to make it glow in the dark, to the potentially famine-ending, could you tweak the genes of rice so it can survive droughts? Genetic engineering could solve some pretty dramatic problems, which is why scientists like Brenda are so interested in it.
So my background is primarily on microalgae. That's what I work on at the moment. And GMOs has been something that's been emerging for us in the last few years as more and more kind of technologies come online for genetic manipulation of microalgae. Specifically, I've been working on vaccines and novel antimicrobials, so engineering algae to be able to produce these products. And I think sort of long term, one of the goals has always been for this industry to try and harness the power of photosynthetic organisms to make kind of commodity products. So that would be, for example, something like biofuels. Now, yields at present are very low. It's not economically viable. So a lot of attention and a lot of effort has been put into strategies to try and boost productivity or increase yields. And some of these will certainly fall into the category of genetically modified organisms.
Algae that can grow vaccines, drugs, produce high yields of renewable fuel. If we can crack it, sounds almost too good to be true. But genetic modification is not exactly the most popular kid in the technological playground. A recent survey found that 64% of Americans were opposed to GM foods, and YouGov reported that 4 out of 10 of us in the UK felt negatively about them. Among the concerns that have been raised is this idea of contamination. A genetically modified crop could escape, interbreed or cross-pollinate with the natural populations. There's even a funky trick some organisms can do where they nick DNA from something else and use it themselves. This is called horizontal gene transfer. In this scenario, once the horse has bolted, there's not much you can do. But finding out how likely this scenario is, or even if it would be a problem in the first place, is a little tricky.
The issue really is about the uncertainty about cultivating these organisms at scale, the impact they might have if they were to get out into the environment, and really trying to ascertain if there's a risk to ecosystems, perhaps, and really trying to nail down exactly what might be the impact on the surrounding environment, as it's really not certain at the moment.
How do you do that? How do you work out what the risk is and what might happen?
So that's a really interesting question. So there has been a really lovely piece of research published just last month from a group in San Diego where they had cultivated algae, which had been one of strains had been augmented with GFP, which is a fluorescent protein, and another had been modified to increase its fatty acid profile, so as if we were kind of growing it for biofuels. And what they did was they set up different nutrient traps around the site of cultivation, and they measured how much of the GM algae they could detect. So these traps were full of kind of the nutrients that algae enjoy growing on. And really what they found at the end of the experiment is while they could detect the GMOs in certain places, depending on the prevailing wind. The actual natural populations vastly exceeded the GMOs. So while they were present, they certainly didn't excel, or they didn't outcompete what was already in the natural environment.
And are these studies quite hard to do in general?
Incredibly difficult to do. So this study, it had been granted permission from the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency in the US. So this is really the first of its kind, as far as I know. In Europe, this would be an incredibly difficult study to do, just because getting a license for uncontained release of GMOs would be very hard.
So the idea is that the people are worried about the risks, so therefore it's almost impossible to do an experiment that would look at what the risks actually are.
Yes, it is a little bit of a catch-22. It's something that we have on another European project that I worked on recently, the NLG project, that we did look at, you know, kind of what might be the restrictions in terms of conducting these kind of trials. I think Europe is very unified in terms of its approach to, uncontained release of GMOs. However, I suppose, as with all of these things, it may well be another country that decides to lead on this first. And certainly the study that's been done in the US has been quite pioneering in the way that it's approached it. And perhaps that will build confidence to let other people try. But in the meantime, yes, it's incredibly prohibitive. We have to literally culture these organisms in the way that we would culture any other genetically modified organism.